Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show on the Voice of Vachon, located on Vachon Island, Washington. That was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown, and together we, the Brieflys, strive to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing to you every week another episode of intelligent discussion of current events, laced with humor and empathy, and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. Our current Briefly panel includes Legal Beagle, scholar and treetop flyer Craig Bellis, avid defender of justice, mariner, cyclist, and top secret engineer Kevin Jones, historian, professor, cool cat, and down under aficionado Bruce Hallman, our big board pilot and real life pilot, morning DJ and reformed Texan Truman O'Brien, and I'm Amy Dreyer, part-time political and politico and full-time shenanigans coordinator. Today, we host Tom Walston, substance use disorder clinical supervisor at Vachon Youth and Family Services. We'll have an important conversation with him about substance use on Vachon and how we can all help save lives in our community. As always, we will begin today by recounting a favorite moment from our week past. And Kevin, you are zooming in from what looks like a marine vessel.
We are still on a marine vessel, just looking out to the harbor entrance to the Seattle skyline. So just north of Vachon. Yes. But our notable event over this last week is the celebration of Susie and my 38th wedding anniversary, which is also our 45th anniversary of when we first met. So those mathematicians out there doing the math say, oh, that was a 7-year time gap. Yes, it was. And so we decided at the end of 7 years that we would be best off joined in marriage, and we've been happily together ever since.
Outstanding. Wonderful. Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. And Mr. Craig, how about you? Anything notable this past week?
Well, I don't know about this past week. Yeah, actually there are, but you just reminded me, Kevin, I'm coming up on my 36th wedding anniversary in just over a week. So we're in the same boat.
So to speak.
In this case.
Ahead.
Yeah, there you go. No, I had a great week. The Coop had a theme night. It was songs with women's names in it, and I performed They Call the Wind Mariah with the great Coop backup band. That was a tremendous fun night. On Saturday, Dig had its Youth and Family Services fundraiser with Dusty 45s. That was a wonderful night. I always loved going to the Dusty 45s. That was a great band and a great cause, of course. And then Sunday, Bauhaus Animal Rescue had a gathering down here south of downtown or uptown.
Depending. Is that the new rescue, kind of the new rescue in town? Because I heard there was a new rescue in town.
That's Haven. That's
the Haven. No, I know about Haven, but I heard additional to that.
Oh, Bauhaus's been around for quite a while, actually.
Long time.
Yeah. So between those three events and putting a new patio in, although I'm not doing that work, so I'm a happy guy.
Yeah, and that Kevin.
That was a good one.
Right. Hey, Craig, you know, we've been listening to some John Prine while out and about, and the thought came to me that the Dylan thing at the Coop was so awesome. I wonder if they've ever discussed a John Prine series there at the Coop.
That's a good question. I'll ask Chris Anderson and Steve Amston if they were thinking of a specialty in that regard. Actually, the theme night that is always the last Friday of the month that Steve Amston puts on. Like I said, this last time it was songs with women's names in it. And there are so many songs with women's names in it that they decided to do it again this coming month, but with a little twist, only female entertainers. or performers.
Nice.
So, but maybe John Prine after that. I don't know. I'll mention it.
Always innovating at the Coop. That's awesome.
That's right.
That's right. Yeah. I was growing and changing. That's the motto there. And Tom, what about you? Anything fun this week?
Well, let's see here. Being that I live in Tacoma, we have the what used to be called the Ethnic Fest. It's now called Mosaic, and that's always fun. A lot of different cultures and lifestyles represented there. And but I'm going to piggyback off of Kevin's. We did have the big annual fundraiser for VYFS down at Dig, and I've heard that everybody had a great time, great food, and Dusty 45s was always a big hit, from what I understand. And I came this close to being able to attend. There was a four-hour wait in the ferry line coming from Point Defiance. And when you're trapped in line and you get an alert saying, after 5:30, there will be no more passings on the ferry due to shortage of crew.
Yeah.
So I turned around after emailing my director, my executive director, Jenny. I said, I'm not going to make it. There's no way. So as soon as I do the U-turn, an updated alert.
Oh, yeah. No.
We now have crew.
Yeah.
It's
too bad. It's too late now. I'm off. Oh, but I wish I could have attended. I heard great things about it, and we made a lot of money, and we can always use a lot more money for all the services we provide.
Excellent. Right? Yeah, Dusty 45s are always a party, every time. All right, Truman, how about you?
Well, not to one up the other two guys, but in 2 weeks, it's 54 years for me.
Whoa.
Wow. Yeah. How many years have you been happily married?
Yeah, well, that's a different question. That's a different question, yeah. And if you ask my wife, she'll say three or four. You know? But she won't qualify which ones, I can assure you of that. So my week, I said earlier on our morning show this morning that I had really had a bad week because I wasn't able to do any of those fun things that Craig got to do, and but I did have some fun. A tree fell on my well house, which I just discovered. You know, I don't know how long it had been there, but luckily I built a really sturdy well house when I built it 30 years ago, and so it was just sitting there. But on one corner, I had to add a little chimney-like thing for so that I could pull the well, you know, had to work on it. And the tree did knock that chimney thing loose. So I went out there on Sunday, I believe it was, and pulled, as I got ready to pull that piece off, a chunk of it fell into the well house and broke the pipe.
Oh!
So I had 1 inch of water at 60 PSI blasting inside the well house. And I had to dive into the water to get it shut off. And so by the time I got it shut off, I had a big cut on my hand, and I was soaked from head to foot, you know, my whole body. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, 630 feet out in the woods of my house. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a little fun.
I'm glad that you didn't take me up on my offer to help.
I started to. Yeah. So mm-hmm. I had to spend the next several days.
Yeah. Kevin, have you been in the drink here?
Kevin's waving.
Yeah.
Can you hear us, Kevin?
Well, I'm just saying, note to self, always turn off the power when you... Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, now we can. Yeah.
I'm trying to get through. Okay, perfect. I guess note to self, to always turn off the wellhouse power when you start working on the wellhouse.
Yeah, well, I should have probably... Well, I had no idea that the darn thing was going to fall in there and break. But anyway, then I had to replumb it, exactly, of course, you know, with the PVC and, man, what a job.
Part of the joys of living on Vashon Island, right?
Yes, indeed. Indeed. But the good news is that I'm going to hire a contractor to actually fix all that. Well, except for the plumbing. I did that already. But it knocked out my light. I had just one little simple light in there. I went in to flip the switch to turn the light on, and boom, blew the breaker. So I'm thinking, what the heck is going on here?
This is very Sorcerer's Apprentice here.
Indeed.
Just keeps
Gremlins.
Going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. But I'll get it. Yeah, I'll get it. So. Mm-hmm. So that was my week.
Yeah. How about you, Bruce?
Well, August is obviously an auspicious month for weddings of people of a certain age.
Yes, you too, you too.
Pam and I will celebrate in a couple days, 23 years.
All right.
Second tries for both of us, but good second tries. So,
yeah.
So August is a good month for weddings. This week, there's just a spectacular fundraiser for the Land Trust, a Big Sky event on Saturday evening. And then, of course, we're right in the middle of crab season. So Sunday and Monday are the crabbing days. And so every Sunday and Monday, I'm up early, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, setting traps, and then Monday night pulling them in between. And it's been a good crab year, so far at least. So
great.
Yeah. Good living on Vashon.
Yeah, that's
summer.
Right. And the crab was not open for a couple of years, is that right?
Yeah, 2 years ago they closed it for 2 years to allow the stock to reestablish itself. And it worked tremendously well.
Lo and behold.
So how about you, Amy?
Yeah, I also had a very Vashon weekend of summer entertainment. I went up to Snapdragon on Friday night and saw Basement Tuesdays in Tramp Harbor, which are great local kid bands. And well, now not just local, they're going regional, but they're always fun. It's, you know, it's a Jacob and Forrest, two brothers, and they're both in different bands, right? And I have to say, I love Basement Tuesdays. Tramp Harbor takes me back to my grungy 90s Seattle youth, and Basement Tuesdays is always like, I know that punk isn't your first, but maybe you could get into some punk music. Yeah. Yeah. A Dish Pit is my favorite of their tunes. You can find that on Spotify, right, as well as our podcast. And then Saturday went to a friend's retirement party at the Coop and listened to some pickup music there, which is just always amazing. It's just, you know, and just like the Coop, you know, first there were like five musicians on stage, and then there were six, and then there were seven, and then there were two accordions, and then, you know, it kind of kept growing like that. And Sunday was Darcy Carlson at the Sugar Shack.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of degenerates once the accordions come on stage, right?
I mean, you haven't lived until you've listened to two accordions going at it live.
Amplified accordions.
That's right. And yeah, my friend Steve was doing spoons, which he has, as soon, I was like, why have I not acquired spoons as a musical talent in my life, right? I was like, this is something I can do. I need to start being able to bring something to the Vashon musical potluck, right?
You would be a hit.
I would, well, you're a hit anyway.
You know, at Folklife, the Spoon Man, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I had a great musical weekend. I did. All right, well, let's find out what is today. It is, in fact, Tuesday, July 30th. That means it's 12 days until the Olympics come to a close, 19 days until the Virginia 5 cruise around Vashon with the Heritage Museum on the 18th, 98 days until the presidential election on November 5th, and 174 days until the possibly very historic presidential inauguration.
It'll be historic in any event.
That's right.
History doesn't apply greatness.
Yeah. Historic. History making. Yep. Let's hope it's once in a lifetime in a good way. All right. Today in history, on this day in 1932, the 10th Olympiad of the modern era opened in Los Angeles with 1,332 athletes from 37 countries parading into the stadium. 1965, U.S. President Lyndon B. Johnson signed amendments to the Social Security Act that established Medicare and Medicaid. And in 1975, former Teamster president Jimmy Hoffa disappeared in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, under what remain mysterious circumstances.
I was a Teamster. I had nothing to do with it.
Disavow all knowledge. All right. Well, that brings us right to now. And today we are talking with Tom Walston, who is the Substance Use Disorder Clinical Supervisor at Vashon Youth and Family Services, or VYFS. Founded in 1977, my birth year, VYFS fosters a thriving community of emotionally healthy and resilient children, youth, adults, and families. They serve Vashon's most vulnerable populations and communities, particularly those who face systemic barriers to accessing services and/or belong to groups historically excluded from resources, recovery, and power. Services and programming they offer include infant mental health, which I would like to hear more about, child, youth, and family counseling, seniors counseling, Hispanic and Latinx support services, case management, substance use disorder assessment and treatment, homeless prevention, medical and ferry vouchers, and emergency financial assistance. So, Tom, I recently met you through work I'm doing in the community to increase access to fentanyl overdose prevention resources. But you and VYFS do a lot more. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you all do there and what resources and programming you oversee that for the Vashon community?
Thank you, Amy. Happy to be here and happy to be a part of Vashon, even though I don't live on Vashon, but we'll get into that in a little bit. But I am the clinical supervisor for the Substance Use Disorder Program. When we say supervisor, it's a party of one. I supervise myself pretty much, but I work in conjunction with a lot of great counselors, a lot of people that are seeking out substance recovery. Oftentimes there is a co-occurring, possibly emotional or mental health issue, and we work as a team in helping people kind of get it together. So when a lot of people on the island feel that they want to make some positive changes in their life and there might be a substance involved, I'm the guy that I get the calls from. And I'll tell you what, since I've started, which was over 5 years ago, it's become kind of trendy to get into recovery here on the island, which is really refreshing. And it's safety is in numbers. When some of your friends see you get into recovery and they notice that you're kind of living a happier, more together life, it can be contagious. So you just never know how other people want to hop on board and make positive changes in their life. And that's what we're here for.
Absolutely, absolutely.
There's a rumor you had a background in radio. We could tell immediately the moment you started speaking on the microphone that you have a great radio voice.
Well, I've been told I have a perfect face for radio, too. To make a long story short, right out of high school, I went to Brown Institute, which is in Minneapolis. It was a radio and broadcasting, radio and television broadcasting school. And my parents were kind of proud, but the way they would tell their friends, "Oh yes, our son goes to Brown."
No,
not knowing it was Brown. A trade school down on Lake Street. But the last station I was at was WHAK. Well, the first station was WHAK on Radio Hill in Rogers City, Michigan. Uh-huh. The last one I was at was Disco 104 KFMX. If that tells you the era that I ended that career in.
That's great.
Well, full disclosure, I was with KATL, Cattle Radio, out in Miles City, Montana. And they actually had a dinner bell roundup time where they banged on a cowbell. True story. And, you know, we also have something else in common. My first job out of college was with the Coordinating Center for Alcohol and Drug Abuse down at Fort Lewis.
Nice.
And I eventually was the director of a counseling center for high school kids. Military dependents down there. So you and I have a little bit of a similar background.
Absolutely.
So toward that end, how did you get into this line of work, and how did you end up on Vashon?
Well, okay, we'll start back when I am a person in long-term recovery myself.
No.
You know, I kind of minimized my use like a lot of people do for many years. People would say, "Tom, I think you might drink a little bit too much," you know, but to minimize it, I would say, "Is there something wrong with just having fun?"
Yeah.
But then you'd get those phone calls the following day saying, "You know what you did last night?"
Yeah.
And you never wanted to hear the response. And in fact, at one of my support groups, they refer to that as incomprehensible demoralization.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, "Oh, that's what I was trying to call it." And then my other substance of use, my favorite one, was cocaine. Mm-hmm. And I used to tell people, "Well, I don't really have a problem. I just like to smell it a lot."
Yeah.
And I was smelling it way too much.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, this was way before the cocaine nowadays is known, even on Vashon, especially on Vashon, to be laced with fentanyl.
Ooh.
So it's become a lot more deadly over the last several years. So I can sum it up by saying what a long, strange trip it's been. I've been in the field of substance use disorder for about going on 17, 18 years now. And I saw an ad for looking for a substance use disorder counselor on Vashon. And I had never even been to Vashon.
Hmm.
So I took the ferry over. I live in Tacoma. And I think being a non-resident of Vashon serves my clients well over here in Vashon because I don't know you. I don't know any of your history. I don't know any of your reputation, if there is one. And people can come and see me with a clean slate without being judged. And there's already such a problem with, well, we know the problems, and there's just a lot of judgment around recovery. Mm-hmm. And some people are afraid to step into it. So come on and give me a call. Come and see us. We'll have a chat. And it doesn't mean you're going to go into treatment, but you might want to just do a little inventory with yourself and see if maybe you could make some positive changes, and we're here to help.
Absolutely. Kevin.
Yeah, Tom, I really appreciate you, not only your line of work, your investment in Vashon and our community with substance abuse issues. You know, interestingly, the fentanyl question did come up in a Vashon Maury Community Council meeting where we asked the King County Sheriff to look at their records about fentanyl issues on the island. I'm curious, from your perspective, based on what you have seen and heard, what can you tell us about the trends in substance use disorders here, and particularly fentanyl? And given our unique location as an island, we're sort of rural, we're sort of, you know, right next to the big city. Do we map into any particular trends like on the mainland, or more like trends that you see in rural communities?
That's a really good question, Kevin. And it's not just limited to fentanyl. I mean, being that we are a rural, remote area and on an island, I mean, we could start with alcohol. I mean, there's really no stoplights here in town. There's very few police. So especially monitoring the streets at night, so people can go into a bar or a private party or at home or whatever and get as trashed as they want, knowing they probably aren't going to get a DUI on the island here. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of streetlights. There's a lot of curves on the roads, and people have oftentimes gone off the road and injured themselves or even had fatalities, and that's a real crisis. Now, as far as the opioid crisis and the fentanyl goes, it started years ago with the Oxy invasion. And oftentimes people started an addiction process because they were perhaps in an injury. And this could stem all the way back to high school sports. And for their pain management, they were prescribed possibly oxycodone, OxyContin, and other things that they weren't taught on how to taper down and end that use once the pain has subsided. So with the price of the drugs and the price of the fact that their prescription had run out, they found that they could achieve the same reaction or the same feeling by buying opioids on the street. And that would go to maybe black tar heroin. It could go to a lot of other things, or manufactured opioids. And then it came to our current issue of discovering that a drug 100 times stronger than morphine called fentanyl came on the surface. And cost is a big factor too, because people will pay anywhere from as low as 50 cents to $5 for a blue. They're called blues on the street. And those are fentanyl. And they can be smoked, they can be injected, they can be snorted. But because the high is so intense, we're seeing way too many overdoses, way too many fatalities with this. And I'm pretty sure everybody in this room on this panel and that's listening knows at least one person that has an addiction problem or we've lost that are no longer with us. So, you know, between Amy's, you know, pursuit right now and her crusade, and hopefully we can work together. We're also working on right now having a training on the island where people can know how to respond to a fentanyl overdose or any kind of overdose and life-saving techniques. I happen to also bring Narcan kits for all of the panel today in case you need them and want to have them handy. I suggest you don't keep them in your office. Keep them in your car somewhere where you may have run into a situation where somebody is suffering from an overdose, and you'll know exactly how to do it, and you could very well be saving somebody's life and we'll have one less casualty.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I, you know, I've lost two people already this year, who, you know, I knew, but who are also very close to close friends who are family members and, you know, right here on Vashon, and know folks, who were saved by Narcan. because someone happened to have it. And so, I've started working with Vashon Fire and Rescue in the commissioner role, kind of found out that through that I could get access to sort of all the fentanyl strips that I could and Narcan. And so have been starting working with the bars to get the strips just kind of, you know, available, right? Just in baskets, get some posters up. Spoken with King County Sheriffs to see if there can be any kind of enforcement going on, because there is widespread knowledge of where these particular drugs are coming from. And so, you know, kind of barring that, getting the message out there, test before you use, right? Just test what you've got.
And can you explain what the strips are, please?
Absolutely. They're really simple to use. They come in a little pack and you dip. Right? You dip the strip into, you know, whatever it is, and it, you know, it's, it reacts, it gives you a color, right? And lets you know. And, you know, our EMS folks use them as well, because they're often in situations, right, that are very dangerous. And, you know, whether there's a suspected overdose or even suspected use, right? You know, we're talking about the kind of thing, you know, it's not as common, but, you know, a microgram can cause an overdose if it's, you know, the right thing. So I'm exceptionally glad to be, you know, partnered up with Tom and see if we can just kind of keep this conversation going in the community, because there is a lot of recreational use on Vashon, and we don't think about it a lot, but, you know, like Tom said, we all know someone, and we know someone who loves someone. Yeah. Right.
Yep. And so, even the adolescents, I mean, high school kids are, I mean, here's a pill. You'll get a good buzz from it. Well, somebody might have good intentions, but they don't realize that that little blue pill could be very easily be fatal for that kid, and it's tragic. And I just also wanted to put this out there to the Islanders that we do have. I've got Narcan kits available at our VYFS office for people at no charge. I hope to obtain more fentanyl strips. Amy dropped off a bunch the other day, but. If you wanted to go to the pharmacy to get a Narcan kit, there's, unfortunately, at this point in time, they have to charge people, and they're not cheap either. They're about $60 a kit. Wow. But the VYFS offices, which is right in the back kind of entrance to the high school, we have them right at the front desk available to anybody that needs them. There are vending machines in Tacoma where you can go in and get free Narcan kits at no charge, dispensed out of the vending machines, and one is the Morris Library on 56th and Pacific.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. And if you see me walking down the street, or just ask, and I'll get you a kit, no problem. Business, home, whatever, we'll get you connected.
And a big part of the cure, or at least the reduction in the fatalities, is education. That's why it's so important. And, you know, for Amy to be talking to some of the bartenders in town, I mean, that's where I did 90% of my partying, or pick up whatever I needed to do to keep me high, is at the bars where people socialize.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, sort of two questions. I mean, Vashon's an island of 11,000 people. What's the scope of the problem on Vashon? What's the scope of the issue of drug use? I mean, is it 1,000 people? Is it 5,000 people? Or do we know?
We don't know. We just really don't know. It's bad enough, trust, to want to play a big role and to have somebody like myself on the island that can refer people to a detox facility if they need it. I've got people going in tomorrow, actually, for a bed, and then we have to organize the inpatient 28-day program. There's, in my opinion, really exciting news coming our way on Vashon with the Thunderbird Treatment Facility. Mm-hmm. And because I've always seen, ever since the first time I stepped foot on Vashon, I just got a vibe of it almost being kind of a healing vortex over here. People were a lot more open-minded. You'd even see hitchhikers over here. You'd see a lot of pride flags, peace signs, their own radio station that plays a lot of good retro quality yeah. music.
There you go.
And, you know, it just had a really good, solid vibe about it. And that's what I want to try to play any part that I can in having that continue. It's really refreshing for me to be able to take a ferry to and from work It's almost like I get on a cruise ship every day I come over here.
When it comes.
It's our time. When I can get on it.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, and I try to think about my office. It's like, okay, now which of the counselors have couches in case I get stuck on the island so I can go sleep on a couch till the next morning ferry comes about. But anyway, so there's no way of really having a number because it's such a secretive. And there's such a stigma around addiction. You could have a family member that you might not even know has an addiction, you know, and especially when alcohol is a little different. You can smell it. You can see it in their sloppy behavior or what have you. But for pills, it's a lot different story.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing that interests me is the story of fentanyl. I mean, sort of, could you sort of educate us a little bit about how it came about? And also, it just seems to me sort of counterintuitive. I mean, the people who are supplying and dealing with fentanyl, I mean, they're sort of killing their market with it. And it's sort of like, what's going on there?
Yeah. I mean, back in the day, I never heard of, I mean, why would you cut cocaine, which is an upper, with fentanyl, which is a downer? To me, that just still doesn't make sense. But, you know, it all started out with pain management. And then we went to the oxys, and then there's something stronger. And I'm not going to get into Big Pharma and the role they may or may not play, because the cartels have gotten some pretty good recipes on how to make it themselves. And they're very creative in how they're going to market their product. There's a lot. Fentanyl now, you know, they used to be called blues, and they still refer to a fentanyl tablet as a blue. What are you on, blues? It's like, okay. Well, now they come out in all sorts of different colors. Mm. And when a little kid sees a bowl or a little baggie of different color things that might resemble Skittles or something like that, it's not like candy, it just resembles candy. There you have another fatality right there. So you're right. I mean, it is crazy because the dealers, wouldn't you think they're killing
their
own
market.
People? But, you know, a regular fentanyl user pretty much knows how to regulate. But when you look at a pill, you don't know what the recipe was for that particular pill. And sometimes it's too late to find out. So I wish I had a better answer for you but
is fentanyl a natural product or is it man-made?
It's man-made.
And what is it?
It's an opioid. It's a pain medication.
It is an opioid.
Yeah, it's a synthetic opioid, and it does have medicinal use. Like, they actually do use it, right, in hospital settings. And, you know, but as far as dealing goes, you know, whatever the customer wants, the customer gets, you know. Sure. And if you're getting a high that, you know, you're regulated, right, like it's your cocaine high is a little more regulated, maybe you like that, right? If you, depending on, you know, the sourcing, right, and the cost, right, everything gets cut with something. And if you can cut with something that, you know, gets a better effect than something else, you might do that, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons, and, you know, the market drives demand. And, you know, it is unfortunate that there are a couple sources here that are known, you know, for dangerously cutting. And, you know, it's a two-prong, right? It's demand and supply, and we seem to be having difficulty with the supply side of things. And so, you know, hopefully, if nothing else, again, you know, educated demand. And, you know, we've tried to shame people into changing behaviors, and turns out it doesn't work. So now let's just save lives.
Yep. No. And another thing, too, it's two-prong in another way as well, because a lot of fentanyl users, since it is a downer or an opioid, will also complement their use with methamphetamine or cocaine, which is also, as we all know, uppers. And just say, starting getting a little too sleepy in the morning, they need to go show up for their job, because the job is usually the last to go, because how else are they going to fund their use? So, time to do smoke a little coke or a little meth or do a line or what have you. So, a lot of times it's a combination of a couple different drugs just to help balance their behaviors and still be somewhat functional.
You know, it's interesting, to say the least. You referenced coming over to the island, you know, the magical isle of Vashon. And it's like going through the looking glass sometimes coming over here. But we obviously have our issues, mm-hmm. like any community, big, little, whatever the case may be. I was just talking to a fellow who was working at my house today, about 29-year-old Latino man, and I was telling him I was coming in for this show, and he goes fentanyl on Vashon. It's like the Dove Project, domestic abuse on Vashon.
Surprise.
It's all here. It's sometimes it's a little below the radar. For various groups of the island, but it is here, and we don't want to, you know, make light of it.
Well, and the rural aspect, I think, feeds right into that. You yeah. know, your neighbor might be 3 miles away.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going on in your house?
Yep, that's exactly right. So, what are we doing on Vashon to prevent substance abuse in the first instance? Is there anything that's going on to really try to keep people out of the habit, the addiction, the psychological and emotional things that are getting them into these situations?
Education is really what it's all about, and I think the more we talk about it, I mean, it was always, some people grew up in the era where, you know, if it's negative, we just don't talk about it, you know, it'll take care of itself. It's like, well, you know, that was then. You know, there's issues now where we need to have a higher awareness. We need to look out for each other. And if you notice a person's behaviors changing, or if they're sleeping way too much, or, you know, we need to educate ourselves. Just Google what you can do to help somebody out. And to be, I mean, when I started on this island, there were, I believe, 3 recovery groups available to people on the island. And now there are actually more than 12 a week, and these are usually anonymous groups. And I update the list every month from my office, and all these schedules are all available. But it's about education and knowing that the stigma around recovery just means you're going to get well, you're going to get better. Is it work? Yeah. I still have to work on my own recovery. That's my own personal journey. But there's a lot of support out there, so don't think you're alone in this. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you're familiar with The Journeyman?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, that's an area, that's a group that can help, can't they, yeah. in preventing, in the first instance, if at all possible. Are there other things the community can do to help?
Well, Journeyman is a really good program for those that don't know what it is. Do you want to just...
No.
Okay. Yeah. It's a program for, I believe, adolescent males and...
Females now.
And females now, too. Perfect. And one of our counselors is one of the facilitators at VYFS. And this is an opportunity for teens and preteens, I think, too, to go out to a wilderness camp and spend anywhere from 3 to 5 and maybe even 7 days with a mentor, and it's about survival techniques and how to basically interact with your peers under healthy supervision.
And they've expanded their programs as well. They have things in addition to those wilderness trips. I think it was started by Alex and Nikki because they had a friend or two who died, and I think suicide. And they said, we got to do something to help people and help young men and women, initially men and now men and women, to find their place in the world. That's one example, I guess.
Well, another place people are finding their place in the world, I mean, how many musicians have we lost to overdose? Mm-hmm. Way too many. There's the 27 Club. There's a lot of other things, but VYFS, and in conjunction with Dove and some other agencies, just during Strawberry Fest, had Teen Jam. And that was advertised as a clean and sober event in this beautiful facility right next to the theater. And it was kids from middle school through high school that have their own bands, a variety of genres, and they all performed, and it was listed as a clean and sober event. What I would love to see are some more clean and sober events on the island. There's a lot of really good movies out there that have a really strong recovery message. I don't know if it would be possible to partnership with the theater here, but on an off night, offer some type of incentive for families or individuals to come and see a movie that they can leave with a real positive message about recovery.
They do have a Tuesday night program that that is available to the community. So you can check with them.
Thank you.
For sure. Yeah, Tuesday nights. You know, this is a good segue into, you know, I know that Alcoholics Anonymous has Al-Anon, which is a, you know, support group for alcoholics, the people who are involved in the program. Is there such a program for substance abuse other than alcohol on the island here?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's you know, there's probably around 50 different 12-step organizations. Mm-hmm. I mean, people can get addicted to everything. There's Love and Sex Addicts Anonymous. There's Overeaters Anonymous. There's Alcoholics Anonymous. There's something for everybody. It's a real it's a combo platter out there. And here's the deal, you know, when we had the COVID crisis, it brought out a whole new opportunity for people in recovery that wanted to do a 12-step group or a recovery group and still remain anonymous, and because they were offered through Zoom. Hmm. You could sign on to Zoom any hour of the day. You could attend a meeting in Australia if you wanted to. Hmm. You could attend a meeting anywhere in the world, and it doesn't matter what your flavor of recovery is going to be. But I still attend certain 12-step meetings. You know, I try to keep it as anonymous as possible because that's the whole theme of the program, but the only requirement is a desire to stop. That's it. Nobody's going to force you into anything. It's not a religious organization. It's a spiritual basis. But Zoom has opened the door up for millions and millions of people. And there was something else I was going to say about, oh, when I first came over here, before I even started working over here, I did attend a meeting. And recently I attended another one, and I don't typically go to any meetings on the island because I have clients there, and out of respect to their own anonymity, I want to just do my business over on the mainland. But I did attend one, and I counted out of 15 people in that room, 12 of them were, I'm not going to say former clients because that's, you know, kind of a violation of, but I recognized a lot of people with a lot of strong recovery going on. And like I said, recovery is contagious. Mm-hmm. So.
And so, you know, if you know someone, you know, a friend, a family member, and you know that they're struggling, or you want to find a way to intervene and help, is that something you can call VYFS and ask for a resource?
Absolutely. In fact, if you want to just swing by, I have a whole stack of schedules in the lobby that are updated every month or as meetings change. But you know what? That's not the only avenue. There's also Smart Recovery, which is an acronym for Self-Managed Addictive Recovery Training, S-M-A-R-T. I think the Smart Recovery has Zoom meetings as well. So you can. There's also Celebrate Recovery, which is more of a Christian-based program. There's Zoom, as well as it in a lot of Christian-type churches over on the mainland. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's tons of opportunities, you know, or if you just want to come in and have one-on-ones. Oftentimes a person says, well, yeah, but I don't have state insurance. I don't have Medicaid. I don't really qualify. It's like, well, no, that's not true. I've actually picked up people in the woods. Some people don't have a phone. Some people don't have transportation. It's like, don't let that be a deterrent to get help. Mm-hmm. We'll find a way to make it work for you.
That is a question. So what kind of fees do people pay, or and how does that work?
We do very little cash pay. If you don't have Medicaid or state insurance, we find out if you qualify, and if you do, we have resources to get you hooked up immediately. And other than that, well, just give us a dog. There's more than one way to skin a cat, so to speak. Yeah. We'll find a way. If you want recovery, it is work. But look how much we worked on our addiction. Sure. I mean, if there was a party 20 miles away, you better believe I'll be in that car going to it. But if there's a meeting two blocks away, it's like, well, there's a really good show coming on TV. Do I want to watch Wheel of Fortune? I mean, yeah. Like, you have to weigh it out and reframe things in recovery and reprioritize a lot of things.
Yeah. Kevin, did you have something?
Yeah, Tom, I just wanted to mention you were talking about Narcan and availability of Narcan. I think it was last year I picked up a couple of the free papers up on San Juan Island, and they both talked about availability of Narcan. And I was really impressed that this really non-apologetic way of addressing this reality, and there is no stigma, right, associated with wanting to help save somebody's life. And so I hope that that kind of an attitude really spreads. And I'm glad to see us talking about it here and people advocating that we need to be ready in case there is a misfortunate overdose with fentanyl.
Yeah, I'm really glad you said that. And another real quick thing about that is the Good Samaritan law comes into place with that as well. So if you try to save someone's life with an Narcan, and if they unfortunately pass away, you don't have to worry about any kind of liability because that goes through people's heads. It's like, I don't want to get involved because what if? It's like, no. You're covered for this. And when you do administer the Narcan, have somebody else immediately call 911. You don't have to say it's an overdose. You say, I have someone here that's unresponsive, and we need help here as soon as possible. Because if the person's friends are around and they hear you say it's an overdose, they're going to possibly get paranoid because the police may be involved, and you can understand where they're coming from. So we just simply say, we have somebody that's non-responsive, please come now.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the good things about Narcan is that you can do no harm, right? Administering it to someone who doesn't need it will not harm them, right? The thing that's going to happen is that it won't work. So, you know, you can feel safe and confident in administering it. And if it does, it does, right? And that's a really good thing. And, you know, just kind of let folks know who want to be supportive, who may not find themselves in a situation where they need to administer or know someone, you know, like you said, normalizing the conversation, right? And if you want to help and you're not sure how, you know, sort of starting that conversation at your local shop that you go to or your local retailer or at your church, right? And just saying, hey, can we, you know, is this something maybe you'd put out some test strips? Do you have some Narcan? And just normalizing that conversation is a way that we can all help, even if, you know, you aren't necessarily at the moment in a community that might be directly, you know, intersecting with that kind of use, that kind of substance use, and just being a safe space, right? You know, when your friends and family hear you talk about it in a way that feels safe and normalizing, you know, you never know when your niece might come up to you and say, hey, you know, or her friend might come up to you and say, hey, so, you know, even though we may not all be in a community that is directly affected, we can still change the way that we talk about it, right, and normalize it and make sure that everyone we know knows that we're a safe space.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Tom, thank you so much. Is there anything else that, you know, that we should cover or we haven't talked about, or is there resources that folks might need that we can highlight?
Well, it's like you hear in recovery, the only thing that needs to change is everything. Yeah. People, places, and things. Change the people you hang out with, change the places you go, and change the things that you do. A whole bigger world out there. We really, really put our addiction puts ourselves in a really small box. And there's so much more to life besides that. And also, I wanted to throw in, there's Spanish-speaking meetings on the island as well, too, because I know we have a substantial Latino population over here. We want to honor that. And plus that, VOIFS, as you guys know, has so many other services just besides my small little department. So, you know, we have something for infants all the way through seniors.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we are so grateful. And also to mention, you know, there's VARSA on the island that does a lot of work with our youth. There's the Dove Project on the island. There's King County 211 that can connect you up with resources. So I would not even dare to say that resources are abundant, but if you seek them and keep seeking them, they're out there. And for your family members too, you know, if you kind of keep seeking resources for how can I help my family, that kind of thing. So I really, really appreciate the conversation and, you know, just really, really taking the chance to raise awareness and start talking about it, because, you know, there's more than one island out there, and but we are all one island as well, right? So how do we support each other in that? Really appreciate the chance to have the conversation today.
And it was my pleasure. And a huge shout out to Voice of Vashon. I mean, you guys are the ones that are carrying the message as well, and it's just so positive, and it's just really a fun vibe every time I tune you guys in when I'm over here. So thanks again for inviting me.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, if anyone you see me on the street, you need test strips or Narcan, just let me know, and I'll hook you up. I did want to take just a minute, because we have had a historic event pass us by that we have not yet talked about, I think, on the Brown briefly, and just take a minute to talk about the major pivot that the Democrats have done, right? And, you know, Tom, you're stick around here. We got a couple more minutes of conversation,
woo-hoo.
But just wanted to kind of, you know, since it is, we're in that news cycle that is ever expanding and going ever more quickly, just hear what folks have to say about our latest Democratic nominee.
Well, before we get to that, I want to say that, you know, I have my right-wing friends that are very, very conservative and very Trumpish in their support. And recently, I sent a note to one of them who just had a birthday, and I said, "Gee, now that you're the same age as Trump, how, you know, do you think you're young and vibrant like he's been saying he is?" And he said, "No, but I'm looking forward to our next president." You know, so and so right after, and of course he meant Trump. And so right after that, I sent him the thing about Trump saying, you know, you wouldn't have to vote anymore. And I said, "Yeah, that's somebody I really want in the White House." I have not heard back from him yet, so I kind of want to hear what he has to say about that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is stunning to think that we might elect our first woman and our first woman of color to the highest office in the land. And, you know, I'm seeing a lot of my particular bubble has a lot of positivity around it. But I'm wondering what other folks have seen or heard. Kevin, what are you hearing on the street?
Well, it's we've been here. Yeah.
Hasn't been on the
week.
Street.
Out on the water, on yeah. the mean waters of the Puget Sound.
Right. I've been hearing things actually for the last 3 or 4 weeks, and the one of the organizations that I support came out with a set of questions like, "Who do you think can best articulate the issues to the communities we need to mobilize?" And when you start to think about where we're at in this historical situation, really getting the word out about why it's important to be engaged and participating in this electoral process. And, you know, you think about bless Joe Biden. Thank goodness he's done what he's done for the country, in my opinion. Thank goodness he's been showing the leadership to be willing to step down. But he hasn't had the opportunity to really articulate some of the issues as well as I believe Vice President Harris will have. Mm-hmm. So I'm really encouraged to see the change, and I'm looking forward to all the energy that that this change is bringing.
I couldn't agree with you more, Kevin. I have friends and relatives of a certain age that really were huge Biden fans, as was I. And when I suggested to him that it was probably propitious if Biden would step aside, they go, "Oh, no, it's all about integrity. You want somebody with integrity." And I go, "You're not going to get any argument from me on that. What you're going to get an argument about is you've got to get elected and you've got to deliver the message and you're going to respond to the messages, if you will, that the other side is bringing out. And if you can't do that, you're never going to get an opportunity to exercise that integrity and that honesty. So it's a turnaround like I've never seen. The energy level, the consolidation of different groups and support, the the cat ladies, the horse ladies, the old white men organizations. Yeah. I mean, everybody wants to get on board on the progressive side of the map, and it's terrific.
Yeah, and I mean, Bruce, a little bit of historical context here. I wouldn't say that we are that Kamala Harris represents a, you know, liberal bastion. She's a liberal centrist Democrat, but certainly in opposition to a very right, far right sort of deal. This, I feel like we've been on a roller coaster ride here. How is that situated historically within countries and elections? Is that, do you get these big swings?
Yeah, if you read Heather Cox Richardson, I mean, a couple days ago, she just did a brilliant piece where she talked about the sort of ebb and flow of politics and sort of the sort of movement toward democracy. And she went back to the French and Indian War, and within 10 years, there was a revolution. She looked at the 1850s when, you know, the Supreme Court and the Dred Scott decision and, you know, slavery was becoming dominant. And within 10 years, there was a civil war and slavery was ended. She talked about the 1920s. You know, capitalism, unsort of regulated capitalism, was just rampant. And then Franklin D. Roosevelt was elected, you know, the Great Crash, and the country pivoted. And she argues, and I agree with her, we're at one of those points right now. And I think, you know, John F. Kennedy wrote a book in the 50s called Profiles in Courage, and it sort of put him on the map, you know, as a young senator. And I think Joe Biden is one of those profiles in courage. It took a lot for him to say, hey, I know I can do the job. I know I'm good at the job. But it's time for me to step back, and it's time to open it up to a new generation. And that's the enthusiasm I think we see right now. And I, you know, not to be overly optimistic, but I think it could be a landslide for the Democrats. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something we haven't seen before. We'd like to live in precedented times, I guess.
Yes, for a change.
Yeah, just for a change. I do feel the energy as well. And, you know, not by any means that 60 is, you know, the standard bearer for the younger generation, but it really is opening the door. And it feels like opening the door to something fresh and new and something we haven't tried before. Thanks for sharing your takes. I wanted to just kind of open that up for us.
I have one question for you guys, and that is that I'm hearing now some of the MAGA movement is the whole thing is going to be for the election denial, and that they're trying to get people in position to not certify the election. So how do we handle that, Kevin?
Well, I just wanted to, I think one way to handle that is to make sure that we have an overwhelming victory, as Bruce was mentioning. And I wanted to say that if you'd like to help achieve that outcome, August 9th, 2 to 3 p.m. at Swiftwater Gallery. Join Active Deb Jackson for postcard writing. And if you miss August 9th from 2 to 3, Wednesday, August 14th from noon to 1. Two opportunities to help elect historically the first Black Asian woman president of the United States. That would be awesome.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for that work. All right. Well, we are closing out here. So I will say on behalf of Tom Walston, Bruce, Kevin, Craig, and Truman, I'm Amy, and we thank you for listening, and we will catch you next week on The Brown Briefly.